of Spanish Aquí presents. We got Tony, Oscar, Risa, and myself, Carlos, here having a good time. It's August. You know what that means.
Leo season.
I don't know. True. I don't mean many things. Hey, when is the summer over, by the way? I never know. I feel like
September, I think. Yeah.
Oh, so
I mean,
still got like, a little bit to
mid-September go. Is the solstice. It's the fall solstice. So, yeah. We still got a while. And, you know, in L.A., it gets really hot in September. Apparently, September is the hottest month in Los Angeles.
That's what everybody says to me. Is that real?
Yeah, because there's June gloom. And then July is always very bipolar. It depends on what it wants to do. And
what about August?
And then August starts to get really hot.
That's what I always say. I always say that August is the hottest. But also, like, I don't know. It's just been so hot the past 2 years because, you know, climate change is terrible.
That part.
So bad, right? Like, I feel like we've talked about weather so much, but, like, it's been so much hotter this year.
I prefer California heat to Florida heat.
Oh, my God. Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes, totally. Yes, yes.
Ever. Yeah. It's like swamp air inside your body. No, I don't like being hot, but I would take it out in the desert.
This is a little like complicated for me to talk about it because it is a better heat. But when you go out to the beach in Florida and you get such a better tan with that humidity,
I can't explain it.
Every time I go to the beach in Florida, I get a golden brown caramel tan.
Yes.
When I tan in California, I just get like burnt red.
Yeah.
Like,
oh my
weird.
God. True. Me too.
Yeah.
The Miami sun just hits different. When I was there a couple of weeks ago, like, I swear, like, I was out tanning in my niece's apartment, like, in the pool, like, maybe an hour. Te lo juro that I was, like, so fucking dark. And then I tanned here in the beach 2 weekends ago. Barely, like, noticeable.
It's just like a weird, yeah. Well, I was in Sarasota over the summer, and I only was in the beach for 3 hours. And I had a tan that lasted me up to very recently. It's fantastic. But anyway, yeah, it's swampy.
What is
another
outside?
Circumstance. It's terrible to be walking around in that kind of heat. It's just like... it's Bikram walking.
Well, needless to say, we are spoiled babies living in L.A. because summers, literally most anywhere else, are intense. I'm from New York. It's gross as hell and disgusting, you know. Not to diss on New York, but let's be real, New Yorkers. We live in on top of garbage. And in the summer...
Well, it starts cooking.
That garbage starts cooking and we smell it. We smell like the streets of New York. You know what I mean? So every time I step out of Los Angeles, it's either too cold or too hot. I straight up feel like Goldilocks in LA.
You got to move to San Diego. That's the real.
Yeah. Oh, is that the desired place
to be? It's always even keel. It's always for most of the year. It's super chill.
What's the tanning like in San Diego?
It's not as good. I went there in the pandemic for a staycation weekend, and again, barely.
All right. What?
Huh? No, I barely got tan.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I was like in Coronado and like right by the water. So, you know, like when you're by the ocean, like it's supposed to make you browner. I don't know, the reflection of the sun and shit.
Oh, that's why. So you knee deep in this tan.
Listen, like... I told you guys when I was like 15 in Miami, I wore, you know, fucking a silver metallic thong G-string like bikini.
So you were tanning other people's for the reflection of your bathing suit.
No, but the metallic was also like part of why you would get tanners too. And I would just put, yes, because I would put baby oil only. Dude,
oh
all
my
over,
God,
all
baby
over,
oil.
Just
how
baby
are you
oil.
Alive, Risa? How are you still alive?
That's like putting crazy. Oil on a pan.
I know. And that, but I would never peel, but I feel like I peel here. Like sometimes like my face will peel off if I don't put sunscreen on. So like now my face is like so much better. I never used to put sunscreen on my face until like 3 years ago that my white friends were like, you have to. And I was like, fine, I'll listen to you on this one thing.
You know, actually Risa talking about faces.
Yes.
Has given me an idea. I mean, Tony and I were talking earlier about the idea of what it means to be fake, right? The idea of being two-faced, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tony, you had a really interesting pica that you wanted to bring up, correct?
Yes, I did. Now, I might surprise all of you here, anyone listening to, but sometimes people confuse me as straight. They don't think I'm a gay man. And I'll let someone just ride with it that I'm not gay. And I've Have any of you been in a situation where you hear something negative that if they knew you, they wouldn't say it? And for example, like someone saying something disparaging about, let's say, woman, or let's say the F word, or anything, and you don't show your cards right away. Like,
disagreement on...
Yes, you don't show disagreement.
You allow the thing to happen around you because you don't want to, be in an uncomfortable place.
Mm. Right. Or encourage, you know, or bring this person into conversation. I don't know. Because I think, especially with the political climate these days, people of different persuasions, you could do that with family members, or it could be something as casual as like a friend's lover,
yeah,
or a coworker.
So what we're asking really is, on top of being fake, is how willing are you to step out and show people what you really believe in when you're hearing stuff that doesn't necessarily align with your beliefs?
Mm-hmm. Like, are you saying that specifically, or are you just saying like, are you fake in front of people? Like, are you different in front of your code switching? Or like, you know, because obviously, like, you know, we behave differently with our friends out on the night than in the town than we do with like our coworkers, maybe if we work like in an office setting or something like that. Maybe, mm-hmm. maybe not. I don't, is that what you mean? Or you mean like the specificness?
Yeah, it could be, I mean, take it how you will.
Okay.
But it could be something like, oh, I could step up and actually make a statement here, or I just can't be bothered with fucking idiots right now. Like, if you're stuck on a plane with someone for 6 hours, are you going to, like, and someone says something disparaging about, let's say, or fucking Latinos or what have you, are you going to open that door for 6 hours and have a conversation?
I'm not going to have a conversation, but I'm going to let them know how the fuck I feel. That's for damn sure.
Yes, I said the F word. Can I say it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what Oscar's reacting
you
to
said,
right now.
You said the F word, and then you were like, and Latinos. Which is like, okay, babe, wow, this is an uneven scale we're playing here.
And what people who wear plaid.
Oh my lord. I was like, okay, damn, only hate on gay people, but what? Okay, all right.
Okay.
Straight up. I'll tell you this though. God. That did remind me of a situation. I worked as a dance teacher for a camp in North Carolina, so the South. And this was like early. I was like maybe right out of high school or something. And some parent was like talking to me, and he like straight up called people, like he's like, oh my gosh, yeah, it's, you know, I love this camp so much because you don't see a lot of wetbacks as much as you do other camps. And like,
yikes.
Yeah, very that. And like, there was a point, I mean, it sticks, it's like still resonates with me because like at that point, there's a choice that you make. Do you stand up for this man?
Or do you?
I want to say in his late 40s or something. Someone who's very set in his ways, it feels like, because of the way that he said that word so casually to someone that was like, I think, clearly not white, you know, with no sense of repercussion at all. Do you like stand up for this person, or do you decide to not engage, just keep it going? And I decided to not engage at all in the situation. And it's one of the biggest regrets, I think, that I've ever had, because there was no learning moment for him. I understand that, like, I was at a place where I was an employee, you know what I mean? Like, that I could have faced repercussions at the job. This was also at a time where, you know, being PC was a little bit of like a question mark of a gray area, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I just, for me, it was like, I really need this job, and I just don't want to exhaust myself trying to educate what I thought was a lost cause, you know?
Can I ask you this, Oscar? Oh, sorry.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
And any part of you not wanting to speak to this person in defense of, was there a fear element at all? Was there any like fear of physical retaliation?
Actually, no, not like, was I afraid? Was I scared that he was gonna punch me or something? No, I didn't think so. But I did. I knew that if I even tried going there, he wasn't gonna listen to me. A conversation was not gonna happen because even before then, it was a very one-sided conversation. I wasn't talking. He was talking at me. If that makes any sense. So
I mean,
from
context clues, if somebody's saying,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, they would also talk at people, not with people.
Exactly. Yeah. So like for me, it just felt like it's not even worth it. It's not even worth it, me risking everything for someone who is going to be defensive 9 times out of 10, probably like a 90% chance that that's going to happen. And also push back verbally, you know? So I just let it happen. But then sometimes I'm like, was I being fake by allowing this thing to just happen without me? Or was it self-preservation, you know?
Yeah. Mm. Also, like, the other side of that spectrum is what we now know as just Facebook comments, which is, like, the opposite. People are going above and beyond. It's like, where do you land in the spectrum where it's like everything gets picked apart, everything gets like fought over, everything's so, you know, but maybe it's because it's the anonymity or the safety of being behind your computer.
That's a whole different world.
To go even harder than you would in just regular, you know, like.
Well, it gives you time. It gives you time to reply. You don't, it's not like right at the moment. Like it's you're right there. You get to like, you can like, you type it and take it back and type it and take it back, just like a text. You know what I mean? Like,
and
I
never, feel like, nobody ever accepts, like nobody ever wins. So I don't understand. It's just a weird.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I don't know. Like, I think about like what you just said, Oscar. And I was like, as you were saying it, I was like trying to think back and I'm like, wow, I used to be like so much more like, I would call everything out, like every single little thing, like anybody, every, I don't care where I was, I don't care who I was with. I think that was a little bit more like young, like Raisa, like, you know, todavía not madura, like, and like understanding like, yo, you can't say this in this place because this person might fucking pull out a gun on your ass or whatever that is. Yeah. And like, I think that that's something that like my like older siblings and like people had to like kind of like be like, yo, like you like tú tienes la boca muy grande cuando like siempre, and like I had to kind of like learn to like be a little bit more.
Did it ever get you in like in trouble? Like, did you ever feel in a situation where you weren't safe? That we could talk about.
You could say yes or no. You could just say yes or no.
You don't have to tell the story.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. There's been so many times, like, but I've like even done it, like how you guys said on a plane. I think I talked about this a long time ago, like on an episode where like I literally had a panic attack because the people were speaking in English, saying that I was like a Mexican criminal, like, and just because they were sitting next to me, and I was like, I can't sit next to these people for 6 hours. Going from like the West Coast to the East Coast. I think I was going to Miami or something like that, or vice versa, whatever. And I was like, no, like these motherfuckers in Crocs are not going to make fun of me and sit next to me the entire time.
Okay, so like, on Crocs, number one.
I will. Wow. Because at the time.
Wow.
At the time, it was not a fun thing on social media. Okay. All right. And Bad Bunny had not gotten involved yet with the Crocs. I'm just kidding. I don't like Crocs. I hate them. I'm more of a chancleta.
So you're a crocophobe.
I'm a crocophobe. Okay. And I will admit it, but I like my Nike chancletas.
You know what? I tolerate that.
Okay. Listen, at least I'm honest. I do think though, like,
as opposed to a crocophile, me.
Yes.
Oh, but, we're really going for it.
We're
But, hi, Oscar. Welcome to the world of prank talk.
Yeah. Well, so like what I was gonna say though to it, I think that it also like depends on who you are with as well. Because like I think like sometimes like I will behave a little bit better if like I'm starting to date someone and like something happens and I'm like, okay, well like maybe like behave a little bit. Like don't come out too hardcore, right? So don't bring the Miami out. Oh. And then like, but then like sometimes it'll come out and that's how they'll find out how Raisa will tell someone off. Like, I don't know. That's happened to me sometimes.
Don't let them know you're from Miami.
not yet. Not after the third date.
No.
Third date.
You know I drop it immediately. Miami. But I mean, like, that's what I say. That's what I call it. Que no me sale la Miami. Because, like, I feel like that's, like, I will fucking just, like, go off on people. But I think since also being in L.A., that has also, like, matured me in a different way where people are more chill here, so I feel like I've gotten more chill about it. But
people say shitty things way more chill in LA. Yeah.
Like, you know, like I do think it's like what I said. Like people are out there like fucking pulling out guns and knives on people for just like saying, you know, don't put your mask or vice versa. You know what I mean? Like just for like such a simple thing. So imagínate when you bring it into like homophobia or like, you know, a racial slur or something like that. If they're like so fucking cocky and saying those things, I see like in 2021 out in the open chilling, then like, I don't know what else is going to come out of their mouth or physically. Like, I don't.
I feel like it's not technically our job to teach people. They're never even willing to learn. Also, I think the fine line for me is if it's a behavior that's affecting me in a negative way. So if people are having a conversation about it, I think there's a line. Like, for example, if you were in the plane and they're talking directly about you, to you, or at you, like, that's different than if they're just having these conversations that are peripheral. They're like, sir, excuse me, but you need to learn about, like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
However, you can nip shit in the butt. And I always say, like, we shouldn't be out here trying to change people with their shitty behavior. But I will definitely put a stop to it if that shitty behavior is in the zone that affects me personally. Like, I don't want to change who you are because that's your shit to deal with. But also, like, yeah, you could be shitty, just not with me. Or at least I'm gonna set a boundary.
Okay, so I have a question. Maybe, like, to give, like a scenario. Let's say you take one of your friends out, right? And you take, like, girlfriend, guy friend, whatever that is, and you take them to, like, an event. Mm-hmm. And in front of, like, you know, your peers and possible, like, maybe, like, co-workers or whatever. I know we work in a different industry. That's, like, we don't have, like, an office co-worker. Mm-hmm. And, like, your friend says something. Even though, like, you're...
About,
like,
what?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, maybe they say, like, maybe, you know, this is a friend that maybe does say the N-word casually with their friends and then, like, just drops that there in the conversation. And, like, I don't, like, or, like, says, or maybe they do say, you know, the F-word that Tony said earlier that I will not say. Or, like, yeah, I don't know. Like, what? Yeah, but, like,
Frankfurter.
I'm sure.
If we bleep it out, that's what I said.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
I think it's different with friends, right? I feel like there's a little bit more of a responsibility with the people that you keep or the people
that's
that are close to you.
Yeah.
As opposed to a stranger. I definitely would have, I would be more inclined to have a conversation or to speak up if it's a friend of mine. Because, you know, it's all part, you know, especially if you're in a work environment, it's still a reflection of, like, yourself in a way. Like the people
or a birthday
that you keep
party.
Around.
You could bring someone to a bar and you could be sitting at the bar booth and they could fucking say something and then you're just like, I don't know. Like, that's happened to me sometimes where I'm like, I don't know. Like,
I've had friends that I am no longer friends with, and that should tell you everything you know, that that were like that in front of people or in business opportunities that they weren't representing. And it was just like a terrible situation. So my choice was like to eventually just kind of move, like just slowly fade. You know, I don't, you know, if you don't feel comfortable, if you can't trust that the other person's aware of a situation and how that makes everybody, himself included, or themselves, then you shouldn't be around those people.
I guess as you get older, you tolerate less.
Yeah. Tolerate. Yeah. For a long time when you're growing up, you think that you have to put up with people. You have to put up with relationships that are toxic or you.
I just thought of an example then on this note.
Okay. Yeah.
What if it's, I mean, career-based. Let's say someone you barely know, and this happens, and it's like you feel for some reason this other person is a gatekeeper of some kind for a potential job that you really want.
You know what
I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
How much do you push back? I think I know my answer.
What is it?
Well, I would
I'll go
speak
first.
My
go
truth.
Ahead, Tony.
I would speak my truth at this point. Well, I have a Twitter, and I can speak about things. No, you know what I'm saying, though, right? Like, let's say someone says something disparaging in an audition room, which it's happened to me, for sure.
Yeah.
But I think now I would push back against it immediately and not take it. I guess this goes back to being
like
to
bully.
Being,
but
the homophobic
you're talking about
stuff,
like bully behavior. Almost.
Yeah, bully behavior or something disparaging. Honestly, the most that had ever happened in this industry for me was commercials in Spanish. It's like a different vibe.
Can you give us an example, like what they like said? It was like a racist thing, like you mean, or?
No, I mean honestly, there was like a scene, and it was I was doing auditioning with another guy, and there was improv and comedy stuff, and they basically said, "Stop, you do it again. Don't be so gay."
Whoa!
Wait, who said that? The casting or the person you were doing improv?
Casting director. The casting director.
The casting director or the person running the session? Because a lot of times those are two different people.
The person running the session.
Okay, fair.
Yeah, because I've had people running the session, including the camera, that were absolute assholes. And I had to say something, like I said something, or I at least said something, because it was like just the way you know, for
they're either delightful or terrible. I don't think there's a middle ground.
imagine just being a woman and having to be in a bikini for that audition.
Mind goes to that. Like when that happened, I'm like, I can't imagine, like, women go through this multiple times a day, these horrible comments, terrible and horrible.
Oh, I mean, I have to have a different face on multiple times a day because of what you literally just said. Yeah, like with men, like sometimes it's just like they'll make a, and it's like, I don't, like, I have to see you at the gym, or I have to, you know, interact with you every time I come to the fucking whatever it is, a coffee or whatever it is. And like sometimes, like, yeah, like it's kind of like you have to choose between like having that anxious, like weird tension at that place, if it's a place that you often go to, like a casting, whatever, or like calling them out. I mean, fuck yeah, that sounds terrible for them to have said that in your casting, like, yeah, audition. That's annoying.
It's annoying. And at the time, I kind of like shrugged it off, like, well, this is the fucking world this is. You know, you just lose respect for everything. And anyway, but I think we solved it.
I think we did it.
I think we solved it, guys.
It's a good thing about these conversations that
we always
can put them in the vault, shut it down, because there's nothing else to say.
Yeah. I mean, throw us a pica, audience, and we will solve it in less than 25 minutes. Yes. Every time.
Personal, the better.
More personal, the better. Absolutely. Yeah. 100.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know. This is all very fascinating to me. I mean, I just want to make it very clear that none of what we were talking about is about being fake necessarily. It's about like what we do in order to sort of navigate through the world being a minority. Mm-hmm. And there are moments, I think, where speaking up is the right thing to do. But the thing that I need to make absolutely very clear is that you don't owe it to people to stand up and be the fucking martyr of a group at all, right? Like, I think as people of color, we are sort of expected to speak upon injustices all the time at the sake of our own mental well-being, right? It's exhaustive work to try to educate people that this isn't the right way to talk to someone, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Like, there are people who thrive on that. You know what I mean? And I just want to make it very clear to the listeners who are POC, who are dealing with all of this, if this is sacrificing your mental well-being or exhausting you by having to explain every single second over some microaggression that happens, it is not your job to teach white people the right way and the wrong way of speaking, right? I feel comfortable speaking out about stuff to a certain extent, as long as I'm like feeling like it's not draining me of my personal experience. I'm not here to educate anybody. Also, who am I to really be educating anybody? But I know when to speak up, and I know when to just like shut my mouth and keep it moving, because I'm not here to educate this person. This person who isn't going to be willing to learn or anything like that, or even have a conversation. People that are willing to have that conversation, I will have that conversation. But I'm not going to go up in arms and having a revolutionary war with someone who is who I am like, I'm sacrificing myself here, and I'm not willing to do that. We were not put upon this earth to educate white people, make them better. We are not magical beings that will lead. We're not guides for Caucasians. We're not going to do that. I'm tired of it. I don't want to do it anymore. And that's that.
Oscar, well said. And you said revolutionary war, which makes me think of the Boston Tea Party. And I think we should have a little cafecito party. Okay, honey.
Are we throwing cafecito on a
into
on
our
river?
Open mouths?
Oh, okay. Okay. Shots.
All right.
Shots. Yes.
Dale. All right, guys. Slurp, 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 slurp. So much slurping, because I had to have so much cafecito to prepare for this interview, because this is literally a dream guest. The boys know I have loved this person for such a long time, to the point that I carry a prop in my car every single day of my life, and I am reminded of him. So without any like credit intro, all I gotta do is we got motherfucking Danny Trejo in the house.
The icon.
In the house.
Yes. Thank you so much for being here. I know, you know, it felt a little cheesy, but I had to bring out my machete that I showed you.
Well, you've been talking about that machete for years, so I think
I got those all over the house, man. It's all right.
You do? So I was like, oh my God, we need to do like a photo shoot. It's funny though, because a lot of people, we all do bring comedy here.
When you get a chat. What'd you say?
Yeah, no, that we, a lot of us three, we do comedy. And a lot of times we have to walk back to our car late at night. So me, as you know, like, woman, sometimes in East Hollywood, some areas, I get a little, you know, I think I'm a tough bitch, but I got to walk back to my car. So I like to let everybody know that I have machete in my car to protect me. So,
oh, wow. Yeah,
you know how people have how people have a baby on board sticker? She has machete on board.
Hey, yeah. If you ever get scared to walk to your car, call me.
I love it. And for those of you listening,
get us on the Zoom, on the Snap. So good. We are so excited to have you here. Read your book and we already knew about you before, but this book is legit.
It goes in.
This is the heart and soul of Danny Trejo. How does it feel to have your life poured out into the world? It's already out.
I did a documentary a while back called Inmate Number One, and everybody got a mistake. They thought I was saying Inmate Number One because I'd been in prison. It wasn't. I was writing about, because the first 5 years of my career in Hollywood, I played Inmate Number One, bad guy, Chicano dude, mean Mexican guy. Yeah, you know, that's who I played.
Yeah.
And,
you
know, I was making money. I was making $320 a day. So it was like, I didn't care. And I didn't know I was knocking down doors for other people to come into Hollywood. But the first time I was interviewed, and I was interviewed by some little girl Latina that just fresh out of interview school. And she said, Danny, aren't you scared you're being typecast? I didn't know what that was. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, you're always playing the Chicano dude with tattoos. I am the Chicano dude. It was very easy. But you understand, I never thought I was going to be in Hollywood. I was doing this because they were paying good. Mm-hmm. And so the more I did it, the better the pay got. And, you know, I played the bad guy. And then, come on, it's like, you know, I'm lucky because women seem to love bad guys. And I even look bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was like, they lie. Yeah, I did all right. But I kept working. Robert Rodriguez was the first one to give me we did Spy Kids, you know, and I was Uncle Machete. I was still the mean uncle, but I was a good side.
But like with a little sparkle. Yeah.
With a holding the Hawaiian dolly. But Robert Rodriguez, when we were doing Desperado, he told me about Machete because he seen everywhere I went, people would like come around and want my autograph and see my big tattoo and they take pictures and stuff. And Robert says, "Yeah, they think you're the star of this movie." I says, "You mean I'm not?" I thought I was too, but Desperado, but nobody really knew Antonio Banderas. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And you know, he's a great actor, but just another pretty boy. But Selma, you know, everybody always says, if you have a dream role, what role would you have to, I'd love to play Selma's husband.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I think that.
Yes.
So would I. I get it. Mira.
You got it, sister. My God.
I'll take her.
And then from the corazón, she's beautiful. You know what?
Yeah.
When we were doing Desperado, she asked me, what are you doing for Thanksgiving, Danny? And I just had nothing. My kid's mom picks them up. So I just, you know, hang out on Thanksgiving. The day before Thanksgiving, this was like 3 months later, we'd already wrapped the movie. She called me and said, Danny, would you like to come over for Thanksgiving dinner? Because she knew I was going to be alone. I put the good cologne on.
You came ready.
I went over there with her family.
Do you remember what you wore? Like picking out your like outfit? Because you just mentioned the cologne. Like, were you like anxious about the outfit? No.
Same thing. You know, come on.
The Thanksgiving vest.
Okay.
Nice slack. Nice shirt and a leather jacket.
Yeah. There it is.
Oh, yeah. I love that. You know, so in the book, like I said, you know, like you get really, really intimate with a lot of, you know, personal details of your life.
And very honest, too. Like, very honest as well.
Yeah. One of the things I don't even know how that works. But like, you are about to have on August 23rd, you're celebrating 52 years sober, correct?
53.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Yeah. That's amazing.
That's the key. That's the key my life.
Yes.
Do you understand me? That's the key to my life. I wouldn't be here if I was still drinking and using drugs. I'd be in prison or dead. And that's just the bottom line. And everybody wants to say, well, do you think this played? No. What played a part in it was my relationship with God and staying clean and sober. You know what I mean? Because it's tough for God to work.
Yeah.
If you're drunk and using heroin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I wanted to, you know, just get into that because I think it's a big part of your book and it's so beautifully like worded. And, you know, you talk about your son and how, you know, even with yourself, how was it, you know, be like, cause you obviously you're writing about other people, you know, did you ask before you wrote about them or did you just write it and then tell them that you were going to
they better read about it.
They read it. They found out.
You know, because that was my story with them. If they don't like it, they can write it. They can write another book about their story with me. And it's really funny because one of my nieces got upset because I wrote about my uncle. And you know what, Mia? All this happened before you were before you even married your mom.
Yeah.
You know, so this was my story with my uncle Gilbert.
Yeah, for sure. And also to add on to your sobriety story, the fact that you mentioned God played such an integral part in your life. I mean, there's so many moments in the book where you were really felt like there was no way of coming out of it the other side. And then something happened, you know, I don't want to call it a miracle, but it was this thing that you said so eloquently of like, that you just allow God to lead you in life.
When I go to juvenile halls, when I go to high schools, when I go to penitentiaries, and I'm talking, you know what? Anything is possible with God. Anything. Do you understand? Anything. There's nothing that isn't possible. You know, I always thought, God, you know, going into space, well, that's impossible without God. Shit, all I need is 250,000. I'll go with that too. You know what I mean? So I mean, anything is possible. It's like, it doesn't matter where you start. It matters where you end. Mm-hmm. I made a deal with Yosito. Hey, you know, let me die with dignity. I'll say your name every day and I'll do whatever I can for my fellow inmate. Mm-hmm. I said inmate because I never thought I was getting out of jail. Mm-hmm. And then Diosito fooled me. He said, okay, vamos a ver, cabrón. He let me out of prison. I got out of prison August 23rd, 1969. I had a year clean and sober. I've been saying his name every day, doing whatever I can for my fellow man and inmate every day. And you know what? I talked to him a couple days ago, and I said, how am I doing, God? He says, you're almost out of hell. Keep it up.
What's pretty amazing, too, is that at the end of the day, none of your experiences were wasted. Like, everything that you've gone through has led you to not only inspire and help, but also, like, move you through your career, whether it's personal, spiritual, or personal. And I think that's an amazing, that's the most important thing about your story is that no matter what happens, and I think it's a confirmation, everything can be used for the greater purpose or for a good purpose. And I think you are a shining example of that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. And also the fact that like, you know, the thing that I learned about you after reading the book is that you are so community minded. You know what I mean? That you were trying to go, you know, you were going through these recovery spaces, trying to help other people
still,
you know, come out the other side. And for that, I commend you. I mean, the, you know, you obviously have a huge impact in Hollywood because of your visibility, you know, for other Latinos out there to see you on screen. For me, the first time I saw you was actually in an episode of Baywatch way back in the day as a kid, and just being like, oh my God, there's people that look like me on screen. That's crazy. That's wild. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And but not only that, Danny, you were also behind the scenes also making a change in other people's lives in the sense of recovery.
You know,
so where does that come from you, Dan?
I did a favor. I did a favor for David Hasselhoff. He did a movie, a low budget movie called W.C. Blue and the Bean when he was just coming up, and you know, a year and a half later, I got cauliflower ears, and these things don't stay in my ear. But.
Mira, cauliflower is very in, okay? It's in. Everybody wants to eat cauliflower rice.
Yeah, yeah, but not ears. That's from
Breaking Bad. Not ears.
But
okay,
you know what? And so later he called me to do Baywatch. And it was funny because you know what? The way the Osito works, I was doing Blood In, Blood Out. We did some of it up in Classic. Wayside on a Rancho. And I met this little chavado from El Valle, from where I'm from, that had a big 818 tattooed right here, right? And I used to tease him, like, oh, homie, they changed us to 213. And he goes, shut up, then. I kept capping on him, right? And then he asked me, hey, how did you get into this? And I told him, I said, you know what, you can't. You want to be a gangster, Holmes. And you can't use, you can't drink. They got a thing called I forget what it is. It's extra casting, you know, and just call them up.
Yeah.
Send them a picture. Yeah. You know what? I go on, a year and a half later, I go on Baywatch. I'm there and I'm looking up here. And I look at this kid, got 818 right here. I went up there, get out of here. I threw sand at him. What are you doing here, Holmes? He goes, hey, come here. And he took me out. We went to the parking lot. He goes, check it out, homie. He said, he had one of those little Porsches. Not the expensive. What was the cheap one? The cheap Porsche.
The Cayenne.
No, the Boxer. No, this is 20 years ago. It was a 914, I think, was the cheap one, wasn't it? I don't know. Anyway, he says, look at that. I got that from being an extra. I said, all right. He's been clean. And you know what? I started this thing. We had Renegang. We used to get about five or six vatos, and they'd all tatuteados, and we'd get hired out. And the one thing, they could be from different neighborhoods. They couldn't fight. They couldn't argue. They couldn't tag. And all of them, you'll see all of them running around Hollywood as grips. And, as, you know, because, and so I just thank God for that, you know, and that's it. That's my job anyway, you know.
Yeah.
My job is sign every autograph, take every picture, and do whatever I can for my fellow man. And that's people cool. think that's so hard. Go to your closet, get three shirts, pass them out to the homeless. Dude, that's it. Everybody I know, anybody that I call a camarada, a friend, anybody that breaks bread at my house, you look in the trunk of their car, they got socks, thermal underwear, they got cortos, they got t-shirts, and we just pass them out here. Just to put a smile on somebody's face.
Yeah,
that's great.
I'll cross the street to sign an autograph. Because thank you so much. Make somebody's day. What a blessing.
Oh, for sure. For sure. You have Trejo's Tacos and Trejo's Donuts, which, you know.
Trejo's Cantina.
Trejo's Cantina. Trejo's.
Now I got Trejo's Records. I got Trejo's Records.
Oh, you have a record label. Yeah. I'm like, so, you know, you out there and you are actually like you're saying you are someone that goes in real life and like you speak with la comunidad, like I've seen you, like I've passed by when you're at Trejo's Tacos. I've taken a picture with you. Literally, I went to get tacos last year, I think it was. And I took a picture with you when I got tacos for the boys for the podcast that day. And it was like, I saw you because I saw you out there and there was a line and I was like, that's so badass because we're in Hollywood and so many people, I see them like being like, hey, can I get a knot or whatever? And like the like celebrity just kind of like, is like, not today. And I respect that, you know, but sometimes it's
hold
like.
Hold on. Just a minute.
No worries.
I didn't get your phone number. Damn, I'm slipping. You didn't tell me.
Yeah.
Right. Mira, it starts with 305. That's all I'll say on the podcast.
God bless you, Mia. But you know what? It's like, that's what everything good that has happened to me has happened as a direct result of helping someone else. And the community, that I live here. Do you understand? I grew up 3 miles away right here. Pacoima's right there. Mission Hills right here. And it's like my daughter. I gave my daughter my mom's house, and it's like I can't go nowhere. I lived in Venice for a while, but it just got too crazy. And El Valle, that's where I grew up.
Yeah. So I have another question for you. It's actually from one of our good friends. She's an actress, writer, comedian, Ana Salinas, and she's always posting about you, saying that you're her twin, and so she wanted to know. That she said that you get casted a lot as like the machete style warrior, like gangster, like badass. She wants to know if there's anything, like any other type of role that you've ever wanted to play that you still haven't had the chance to play. Because again, you have over 390 something like credits.
I told you, Mia, I want to play Selma Hayek's
husband.
Okay.
That's going to be the title of the movie.
Like a real square.
Okay.
Vámonos. Quiere dormir. Quiere dormir. Ya vámonos a dormir.
It's just a day in the life of the
husband. A day in the life. Yeah. If that's the name of the movie. Also, what if they say, you got to cut your hair for that?
Hey, it will go. We can put extensions in it next year.
I get it. Okay.
Every time I get ready to cut my hair, my agent will call and say, you know what? You got to film. Hey, they want your hair long. Okay.
Okay.
So my hair is
maybe
long.
Maybe next time.
That's so funny.
But I, you know what? It's like that, I have a record label and they got nine Latinos on it. And, I got Jasmine Torres, who could be a Selena lookalike, and she sounds, she's got that same unbelievable voice. I got Twixie, Diana Gonzalez, who is like she has like a microphone, right? Rawr! She don't need a, you know, one time when we were at the Kobe Memorial, and she was singing on a little micro, and the micro dropped it. Boy, everybody could still hear her. You know, she's unbelievable. Wow. And then I got Tara Noodles, like a little gabachita. But her mom's a little short Chicana out of Corpus Christi, Texas. And it's funny because I said, man, wait a minute. You went to Corpus Christi? You're white. And she goes, Danny, the Mexicans would beat me up because I'm white.
Yeah.
The white girls would beat me up because I'm Mexican. And what'd you do? She said, I learned how to fight. And then she said, but when I started playing music, everybody like just kind of like got around me and made friends. And I said, music tames the wild beast. You know what I mean?
For real. Like,
and that's, now she was very popular in her high school, but because she could play and sing, you know.
Oh, wow. Hell yeah. Yeah. I mean, that the music is a whole, the music whole label thing. Game and that whole, that's a whole different ballgame from
We just dropped a single and it's called If You Don't Mind, and it's by Trish Toledo and Coda the Barber. And Trish Toledo is amazing. You know,
Trish did our show. She did our live show.
She's so cool.
We did a show with some of the cast from a movie you were also in, Mi Vida Loca.
We had her
sing, and hearing her live is
I did
incredible.
That as a favor. Everything I've done is the I did a movie called Breaking Bad. No, not Breaking Bad. Badass. A movie called Badass. And I did it as a favor because it was a low budget movie that didn't have any money. But this movie over here that I was going to do had about 25 grand. And I was arguing my agent's Latina too. She's Gloria Hinojosa. She's from Texas.
Yes.
And she was like, Danny, you should do this. I'm telling you, it's going to turn into something. This is good. And I said, Gloria, there's 25 big ones over here. And she goes, it's not just about the money. So come on, it's about the art. And she was, and then you know how women do when you like really disagree. Yeah, exactly. Well, okay.
Okay, right, mira.
Fine.
Okay,
go ahead.
Mira,
go,
pero remember, go. It was you. No, I want to remember when.
I swear to God, that's sexy. And I said, okay, all right. So we do this movie. The damn thing turns into a trilogy. Mm-hmm. I make four times the money that I was going to make on this thing. But I met a producer named Ash Shaw, who saw that I eat good food. I don't eat processed food. And in a low budget movie, you know how a lot of times they'll go see Jack and so he would see that I'd order a salad from some place or something, and he says, Danny, why don't you open a restaurant? Jokingly, I said, Trejo's Tacos.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow. That was the birth of it.
We did Badasses, and Badass on the Bayou with Danny Glover. So he brings me a business plan. About 12 pages, I opened it. It had no killing in it, so I gave it to Gloria. She read it and says it's a no-brainer. Let's get it. They're not asking for money up front. Let's get in the restaurant business. You have say-so on the food. You have say-so on the menu. You have say-so on the art. You have say-so on everything. So,
dope.
Hell yeah.
Maybe Trejo's cookbook, maybe at some point.
Yeah, that's out. I had to say so on that. And the reality is, it's like right now we got like 7 restaurants, 4 pop-up restaurants. We're in Miami. We're in Chicago. We're up north. They want us in San Antonio, and they want us in Hawaii.
Oh, wow. Cuba.
That's incredible.
That's fun. Now you get to try. You have an excuse, too, to just travel.
Like,
hello.
Hawaii. We've got Hawaiian
tacos.
It's
for work, I promise.
Yeah. I love a reason to tan. tacos and tanning, I mean, perfect. It sounds great.
Trejo's tanning, huh?
Yeah, Trejo's tanning.
It can be, you can put your name on anything. It'll be anything. It'll work. Yeah.
So it's working. Are you kidding? I got a CBD cream that I had a shoulder surgery, and that's working good. Yeah. Mm. They replaced my shoulder. They went to Shoulders R Us. And got me another shoulder.
I need one of those.
I've been working
full range.
How'd you hurt your shoulder?
It's so funny because somebody said, "How'd you hurt your shoulder?" And I said, "A baton hit me," you know. And they go, "Oh, were you like in a drum band?"
A baton?
No.
Yeah.
No. Wow. Police baton.
Tell me your privilege without telling me your privilege.
Wow, Mira. Yeah, I know.
Oh, you're a band. That's hilarious. That's fantastic.
My life has just been working so good. I told you, I got a little fighter. Her name is Senisa Estrada. She just won the WBC, WBA champ of the world. She's 108 pounds. And
amazing.
God, she's great, man. She's like I said, she's representing your girl power, man.
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah. I love that. I love watching those.
You
fights.
Are just taking steps towards just like, and which is great because it's community minded, but it's really going to take, it's taking over the world, basically.
I love what I do, and I get to do what I love. Music is like just awesome. I love.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how did you get started with your record label?
You know what we were doing a while back? There was a kid killed named Gabriel up in Palmdale, and the whole community were really angry, and they lo mataron. And so we put on a fundraiser. We went up there and we offered like $200, I think, for a singer, whoever won the contest, and was just so we could do something. And Twixie and her mom lived in a battered woman's shelter because her mom, I guess, got beat up by her old man. But so anyway, they hitchhiked from LA all the way to Palmdale to sing this song, won the $200, and we're going to hitchhike. I started talking to them. And she said, well, you know, she's 17. She wants to get into music. I said, you know what, Mia? And she sounded good, man, singing rancheras and stuff, right? So, you know what, when she started singing, people started coming out of the market because we're in a big parking lot, right? And so I started a record label, Trejo Music. And she worked with me till she was 18. And then I got Tara to come in. And Tara was working, and then Twixie started using, she fell off the, fell for one of them slick talking Chicanos that was loaded, and she went out. And so couldn't do it. And I told Tara, this guy, one of the guys I was working with, burned me for about $150,000. And so I told Tara, I guess that's it. And she kind of like, that's the end of my dream. And she said, but can I stay and practice? Because she would practice in my gym because I got married. And she would, yeah, go ahead. And so, and I remember asking Diosito, saying, God, what you brought me this far, man? What are you doing? You're going to let everybody, blow the dream. Why don't you help me here?
Yeah.
2 days later, I swear to God, I run into a camarada of mine named Baby Bash. Sugar, how you
getting? Oh, yeah, man.
Baby Bash. Oh, yeah.
I run into him, right? And he says, hey, are you still working with that dude? I go, nah, Bash, how about to burn me for about $150,000? Bash says, are you going to kill him? I go, no, hell no, Bash. Shit, my life's worth a lot more than 250, homes.
Yeah.
255, I might. But I said, nah, you know what? It draw me a lesson. Said, well, what are you going to do? I said, I don't know. He said, well, why don't you bring him to the studio? I said, Bash, you live in Houston. He goes, no, I moved over here. I live over here in Chatsworth.
Oh, I said,
are you
wow.
kidding? So for $5,000, me and Bash dropped an album called Chicano Soul Shop, Volume 1. And it's available on something, I don't know. And then, and now Spotify, we just dropped that single with Trish and
amazing.
And now we're getting ready to drop another album with Jasmine, Diane, and Tara. They're awesome. They're God. Oh, Tara sings just like como se llama that guy, Celine Dion.
Celine Dion.
Yeah, it's really that real high voice. And Jasmine looks exactly like
Selena
and sings like her. Twixie, she sings any way she wants. She can. One time, we were at the studio and the guy was just doing beats and she was hitting it. And Bash says, you're freestyling. And she got all embarrassed.
Yeah.
I mean, she's that good. I mean, she's awesome, man. So.
Tiene chispa,
got an eye for talent.
And speaking of having an eye for talent, I know we have to wrap up, but I have a really, really hardcore question for you. Okay. Are you ready?
Yes. If you want to go out with me, yes.
Okay. All right. Well,
that's it.
Dinner's on me. You and your family. I'll feed your boyfriend. I'll feed all of them. I don't care.
mira, yo soy cubana, and my mom is literally in town today.
Where's so your mom?
Let's my go. Mom is.
You let me know when you're going, man. I can't do it tonight. Tomorrow night, bring them to town. Bring them to Trejo's Cantina. Yeah.
I'm going
to
tell her. I'm not kidding.
Please. Yeah, absolutely. The whole staff. I got you.
Yes. Oh, you're the best. But I thank you for that. You're the best. But one of my questions was, so you're a big, LA Dodgers fan. You're a sports guy. You love sports.
LA Rams.
Yeah, the Rams. And so one of the things that I know is, from living in LA 9 years now, I'm from Miami, but LA and San Diego, they have Dodgers Padres beef. And they also have street meat beef, meaning who has the best carne? Yeah. People in San Diego say they got the best carne because they're by Tijuana, but people in LA say that they got the best carne. I don't even know why, but they say it. So
I gotta
because
say,
you are.
Settle this.
So I need you to settle this. Okay, ¿Quién tiene carne mejor?
Yo, if you go to Trejo's Tacos, you're going to taste the best carne asada you've ever had because we marinate that thing all day. The best carnita. Oh, my God. I'm getting hungry. Best carnita. You know what? And then we even got jackfruit. And jackfruit tastes so good. And I'm telling you, it's like, I like it. Don't tell nobody. But we got a cauliflower taco that's delicious. Yeah.
That's
but,
for me. Well, yeah, I'm vegan.
Oh,
I know.
Love us.
I'm sorry.
No,
I'm sorry to disappoint you.
I, that's what I said. When we did the restaurant, I said vegan and vegetarian and gluten-free because I work with autistic children and they don't do good with gluten. Gluten affects them really bad.
Right.
So if you come in at 5 and 6, you'll see a lot of family with autistic kids. They bring them in. Mama don't have to cook 3 different meals.
We appreciate that because that's definitely, very appreciated for people that don't eat animals.
Again, love for the community.
Yeah.
You're going to love our vegan.
Yes. Before we go, we just want to say again, thank you so much. We will be plugging your handle. We want everybody to make sure they do buy your book. We're going to tag you and all, like, the label, everything. And, you know, is there anything else you want to say before you go?
God bless you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, man. Appreciate
dale.
That.
Dale. Gracias.
Beso.
Spanish Aquí Presents is an Earwolf production, executive produced by me, Raisa, Tony, Carlos, and Oscar. It's engineered by Jordan Duffy and produced by Anita Flores.
You can follow us on social media on Instagram at Spanish Aquí Presents and Spanish Aquí on Twitter.
Find our latest merch at potswag.com and especially look out for the Spanish Aquí Presents enamel pin set featuring all of our beautiful faces.
Yeah, and help us get the word out by telling a friend about the show today.
Make sure to rate and review Spanish Aquí Presents and follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen.
Want more Spanish Aquí Presents? Find our full archive and ad-free episodes on Stitcher Premium. Use promo code SAP for a 1-month free trial at stitcher.com/premium.